Welcome to Otalkin' with Dave. Coming to you from his palatial fortress in Sin City, where what happens in Vegas is talked about everywhere. Put your hands together for the pastor of positivity whose glass is always at least half full. Here's Dave.
Hey, how we doing out there? I hope you're doing well. I am top shelf, if I say so myself. What we're talking about today is power of words. Word Up, song by Cameo. I wish I could play it, but I would probably have to pay somebody some royalties, and I'm not into that. Words, vocab. As a hip parent, I like to use the vernacular of youth. Woo, is that embarrassing? Oh man, yo, sup, broheim, you know, something's fire. I'm usually a decade behind what's current or hip or, you know, what's in. And I think it's partially a parent's job to embarrass their kids by using, you know, some of those words to fit in. I remember when we moved to California, imagine having teenagers freshly to California. Okay, they come home. How's it going? You hang out with their friends. It's a little different from, you know, Tennessee where we moved from. And, you know, it was past the Valley Girl stage, but it was still, there were still some words or some dialects that was great. And the kids adopted quickly. My son doesn't have much of a Southern accent. Of course, my daughter does. But she quickly acclimated to the, you know, the cadence and the brogue of the SoCal teenager. Well, my wife, when she would listen to this, and then she would just naturally try to speak in some of the, you know, the phraseology, it was hard to hear. I mean, my goodness, it was a Southern SoCal slang that no one should have to hear. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. You know, you start with the tangent, you got to reel it in, but it's just words, English, and the whole range of what I'm going to talk about is, you know, I believe words mean things. I think the words you use, the words you don't use, the phrases you use, whether it's proper English or proper grammar or whatever, that tells people a lot about you. I am identified. I'm a proud Southerner. You know, some of you think I'm hard on the South. Well, I can be. I'm from there. I can say I'm a redneck, hillbilly, white trash, whatever. But don't you do it. Don't you do it. But our words tell people a lot about us. And sometimes, you know, we change our words to possibly fit in. Our environment has an impact on us. I remember 10th grade, Miss Miller. She tells this story. When I was fortunate enough to have some great English teachers in high school, and I'll go back to that in a second, but Miss Miller was close to retirement. I think she had like 3 years worth of sick days built up. I think when she retired, she still got paid for a while, which she deserved. But she would always tell the story. She went in, I believe it was the Navy, and she didn't want to be seen as this, you know, this goody-goody English teacher coming in, so she developed the word ain't. She would say ain't to both fit in, but also to show you, hey, I'm not just an English teacher that's going to correct everybody's English. And anybody that had her, and some of you are listening, remember Miss Miller, she would say, it took me, you know, 6 minutes to start using the word ain't, but after I got out of the service, it took me 6 years to get rid of it. Because it was such a habit. The words we use, we can change, you know, we can implement them, which, you know, we'll talk about. But also, it's hard to get out of that habit. So if you've been doing some things for your whole life, it's very difficult to change. And nobody's saying you must, but sometimes it would help you a little. But we'll talk about that. Miss Miller also, first day of school, she had certain pet peeves. At one end of the board went all the way across the front of the room. At one end of the board, she would put A and then shuffle her feet all the way to the other side and put lot. And that was her way of saying, it's two words. Don't spell a lot, A-L-O-T. It's a lot. That was one of her things. She had another one. I can't remember what it was. But, oh, she was known for that. And also, it's not necessarily correct right now, but she said there's no such word as enthused. No such word as enthused. It's enthusiastic. That was her big thing. So this is 1980, 1981 when I had her for English. And she's right. Back then, enthused was not a word. Now if it is. You look at it and it's accepted. And I looked it up. And it was in the late 20th century that it started being considered okay in written form to say enthused. Oh, she would be furious if that were the case. But why are words so powerful? Do you agree that words are very powerful? I mean, I grew up, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Yeah, I still believe that. I mean, you get your feelings hurt from time to time, but hey, it's better than a punch in the face. But things are so politically charged now. I mean, words, labels, being canceled, things, you know, woke, all these things, these words that are being hijacked that mean something that they weren't intended to mean, but your words get you in trouble. How many times in the news in the last few years have people's words haunted them? And even words that were said decades ago, they meant something totally different. Now they're coming back and harming, or you're being judged on something that may be taken out of context. So words, like it or not, they're powerful. You know, one of my, back in the day, one of my favorite comics was George Carlin, just because of his observations. He worked a lot with words, what words mean, the different, of course, his most famous skit is 7 words you can't say on television, and I'm not going to say them on here either. I could. It's a podcast. I can say whatever I want, but I'm not going to. But it's about words you can't say. And then he talks to each word. You know, why is that even on the list? But words mean things. So back to my English teachers, because I'll mention grammar. You know, I know you're thinking right now, Dave, why in the world are you talking about words? You have no right to be be a linguist. The words that are coming out of your mouth do not scream authority or qualifications here. Well, let me tell you my qualifications. My English teachers in high school, 9th grade, Miss Thrasher, had a bit of a crush on her. She's still around. She knows it. Miss Miller, the one I just talked about. Miss Jones, Nell Jones. And then to end it all, Miss Graves. Now, this is the Mount Rushmore of English teachers. Our college prep English regimen going through Sheffield High School, it was unbelievable. I mean, they were definitely difficult on you. Each one had their own nuances. I think Miss Miller was probably the most fun just because she was, she was up there and close to retirement and kind of crazy and bawdy, and you could tell she loved her subject, which they all did. Miss Thrasher, she had to deal with a bunch of rookies. We couldn't even believe we were changing classes in between periods. So she had a lot to deal with. Miss Jones is when it got more serious. She was serious about the English language and literature. And, she was tough on us. But she prepared us for Mrs. Graves. Oh, Miss Graves. A short lady. I was probably 6 foot, 6'2" by the time I graduated, and I was at least a foot plus taller than her. She never had a problem with discipline in any classes I was in. I've never seen it. I've never heard of it. She didn't demand it. She just, the way she approached the topic and her no-nonsense demeanor, nobody pressured her. I never saw anybody show her any disrespect. And I think it's just respect for who she was and the fact that she's getting us ready for college. So much so. I mean, I'm pushing 60 now. I don't think they're going to go back to my transcripts and hack me on this. But I turned in the same term paper that I turned in high school as a senior in college, and my capstone English professor in college, and made a full grade higher. I didn't correct anything. I didn't change anything. I turned the same one in and made a higher grade in college. So kudos to my English teachers. Fantastic. If they heard me now, they would probably get the transcript, mark it up, and send it back with a ton of red ink. But they taught me the power of English, of literature, of knowing how to speak, whether I choose to or not. And so, you know, I've written books. My books, some of them have grammar errors. Some of them have, you know, different things that aren't the King's English, but that's the way I talk. I know I don't speak properly here. I use, you know, Miss Miller taught us the be verbs. How long ago was this? That was 80. This is 44 years ago. I had Miss Miller. The only person ever talked about be verbs to me. Listen to this. BM is, was, were, being, been. I can repeat the be verbs. I don't use them properly a lot of times. You know, I don't speak properly a lot of times, but I speak the way I want to be perceived. And to me, that is a powerful thing. I want to be taken seriously, but I am not an intellect. I'm not perfect in any way, especially with grammar. I remember all of my English teachers. I remember lessons from my English teachers in high school. I don't remember anybody in college. So my point here is we learn some of these things at an early age. I've got stories about college, and maybe I'll share those from time to time. But I owe it to my English teachers to at least try to act like I'm somewhat educated in my use of the English language. But the words we use, they tell a lot about who we are. The words are important. The key is understanding and utilizing the words that portray who and how we want to be portrayed. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. You know, I just thought about some words, you know, and why words are important, the words that we use. Now, before I do that, though, I guess I speak for a living, and maybe this is more important to me in your mind. It shouldn't be. I don't think it should be, whether you speak for a living or not. If I speak for a living, then I can just get better or redundant out of, you know, repetition. I think it's important that we understand the importance of the words we use. So first of all, just influence on self-perception. The words we describe, how we describe ourselves, you know, our self-image or our self-esteem, you know, a positive language can build confidence, which I talk a lot about, while negative language can diminish it. So if we know positive words instead of negative words, it will portray a different influence or self-perception. And that has impact on others. Our words can uplift or hurt other people. And some people know that and use it for the negative. I like to be encouraging. If I inspire anybody, that's great. If I motivate somebody to make a positive change, that's fantastic. But still others, they use harsh or critical words to damage rather than constructive criticism. So our words have impact on others. How many times have you heard, it's not what you said, it's how you said it? I know if you've been married, you've heard, or in a relationship, you've heard that plenty. But also, just the influence of shaping reality. You know, the language you use can shape a perception of reality. And what I mean by that, if we're positive about something and use positive words, like I said earlier, we create a more optimistic outlook. You know, if everybody is negative about something that's going on and we're more positive, and this is different than self-perception. You know, self-perception that I talked about before, it's more on people or yourself or how you feel about yourself. Reality is more about an outlook, how things might be, how this might impact something that's going on. Again, the other side of that is it can also be negative and reinforce pessimistic views. I believe wholeheartedly that deep down, we're wired either to the positive or to the negative. And if we're not at our best, we will go to that side. So shaping reality around positive or negative views, our words have a lot to do with that. A ton. Yeah, and then we talk about relationships or whether it's, romantic relationships or just interpersonal relationships, working relationships. Most of the time when things break down, what do we blame it on? Communication. It's a catch-all. So the words we use and the language we use helps convey our thoughts or our intentions. And so many times I've said something and it came across different than I meant it to. So if we can focus and prepare, I'm big on preparation, but if we can focus on the words we're using and tie that to what we meant to get across, we're going to reduce a lot of misunderstandings. Better communication. And, this is not always positive. I've talked about having tough conversations with people. I've talked about a lot of things that you dread, moments that are coming up that you've got to do. And maybe it's the other side. Maybe it's positive. But I think on the negative side, being able to say what you need to say very clearly and as few words as possible, that's a fantastic goal. But that makes you think about your words. What are you going to say? Who's your audience? What is the meaning of what you're saying? What do you want to get across? And how do you want, when you leave that conversation, how do you want the communication to unfold? Okay, communication clarity. The next one, just building relationships. Early on, what do they say in the first few seconds, people have you sized up just by looking at you. And then the words you say, you're either going to be a positive or negative first impression. Can you overcome it? Of course. But words are fundamental in building and then maintaining relationships. Early on, you're going to build that and then you're going to maintain it. But then honest, respectful, and supportive communication, that's going to strengthen your relationship and your connection with people. While the other side, if you're always negative, if you're critical, that's going to tear it down. I mean, it sounds like common sense, but if you looked at the transcripts to some of your communications and conversations, you may see that, I meant to say this, but it sure sounded different when it came out. So being mindful of that. Emotional influence is another reason that words are so important. We can really, with our words, we can provoke powerful emotions. They can go from comforting or encouraging or bringing joy to, we can really cause pain and anger and make somebody sad. Music does this. A beautiful song with beautiful words, it can fire me up, it can make me cry, it can make me think, it's fantastic. The words we use can do that. And I can think of some examples. They're very personal, so I'm not going to say it. But two different people can say the exact same thing, but the source can make all the difference in the world. So in your professional life, that effective communication like I talked about earlier, to me, it's a key to professional success. The ability to articulate an idea when you're put on the spot. If you stammer or takes you two paragraphs to say what you could say in one sentence, that says a lot about your preparation or your articulation. To be able to articulate ideas clearly and persuasively, quickly, that means a lot. The words you use, the vocabulary that you have, and in all situations. I mean, from the boardroom, we call it from the carpet to the concrete, from the boardroom to the shop floor. You don't have a lot of time. Be able to articulate what you need to say and mean to say. Then in conflict resolution, words are important. They're so important. Being diplomatic, being empathetic. Language can de-escalate a tension. I know these people who you go into, we've been in situations before and both sides are just at each other's throat. And someone will cause for a pause, and just with a few words, diffuse things.
Hey there. Are you having computer problems and can't get the help you need? Is there a language barrier or other obstacles that make you feel insignificant and unappreciated? We know just how you feel, and we are here to help. We are the Amish Tech Team. The Amish Tech Team is known for their work ethic, quality craftsmanship, and attention to detail. The Amish Tech Team will ride to your house, assess the situation, and leave you feeling good about the experience.
Oh, Jedediah was just a lovely young man. He didn't fix my computer, but he built me a new desk, repaired my roof, and planted two rows of corn in the backyard.
All of our technicians at the Amish Tech Team are English-speaking, respect traditions, and know their way around a grist mill. Send a letter by mail or carrier pigeon today, and when we get it, we will hop in the first buggy available and head out to your place. And the first 10 requests will get a complimentary jar of sorghum or an Amish Tech Team horseshoe to use as a paperweight. It's a real horseshoe. You don't have to put up with services that put you on hold or talk funny. Contact the Amish Tech Team and we'll be right out as soon as we get your message and get free of our chores and load up the buggy and travel to your place, depending on traffic and the weather and those dad-blame motorized vehicles and all those bright lights and shiny signs that keep distracting the horse and tempting the youngins.
I remember we were in a very difficult negotiation in New York one time, and this person, thankfully, was on my side, said, you know, we're getting to an unproductive level here. We both feel very strongly, not to say one side's right or the other side's wrong. Let's just take a break, take a breath, and let's take 30 and come back. And while we're on break, let's think about common ground. And it just diffused everything. But he was so articulate with what he said. And that calmed the room down. Plus, this person went on to do much greater things because he was also the voice of reason. So I think we all know words are important. So that's why I wanted to go through a bit of a list there. But also there's certain words that create such strong emotion. And I'm going to say some words here that probably get me in trouble. You can cancel me all you want. You know, just click off. But what I'm talking about are words that have been changed. You know, but maybe it's cultural or social or ethical shifts. But words that used to be nothing now are very different. And I pulled this list because I wanted to see, are there some that I don't even know about? I remember I'm from the South. So in the South you had, it was a lot of racial connotations to words. I mean, I've got a lot of friends of all different colors. In the South, you only had two or three colors. In California, you got every color in the rainbow. It looks like the United Nations at my house when the kids would have friends over. But the term colored, that used to be accepted. And I'm not going to say if I have opinion one way or another, but then it got outdated. And then they would say black and then African American to the point to where, I think a lot of times people will use the wrong term just because of their generation. And so I'm not saying what's right or wrong, but that changes over time. I went to California and we had tons of Asian friends, tons of Asian friends. And, I can't tell. This is not a racist comment. People that grew up there, they can look at an Asian and tell where they're from. I can't. I can't at all. But to go back to that, when in, a lot of places throughout the country, they would call it an Oriental restaurant, meaning they had Asian food, Chinese food or Japanese food, whatever. It was called Oriental. Now that's offensive. Asian is the proper term. I remember when I was in Southern California, I got to the point to where in corporate America, you had to be careful what you called people. And I didn't want to offend anybody. So I would ask them, I would go to one of my Mexican friends and I would say, hey, yeah, Hispanic, Latin American, what do we call your group of people? Cause I respected them so much. And he said, hey, I'm from Mexico. I'm Mexican. Thank you. Very good. And you go with that. So these nationalities or social groups, it changes over time. Here's another one. It's a tough one. I have a lot of people that I respect so much, and you know, now the terms have changed so much, and they're larger. They're multi-syllable words. Like the term retarded, in the 70s, that was common. It was common. That wasn't negative. That was a status. Now they've changed it to intellectually disabled. Well, that's a mouthful. I wouldn't call anyone retarded today. You know, now it is actually a cut down. It's coming back. You're hearing it a lot more now. And they're using it as a cut down or a disparaging comment. And they don't mean it. They're just talking about, you know, a friend. That's same way with gay or retarded. It's a cut down. But the true meaning of it is intellectually disabled or developmentally disabled or challenged. These are the preferred terms now. Who can keep up with this? Don't get me started on midget. Midget? Oh, you can't say that anymore. It's a little person. Or a person with dwarfism. I've even heard people make up some crazy stuff. You know, height challenged. I don't care. I remember the comedian. I forget who it is. I'm trying to think. Oh, I do remember. Mark Norman. He wrote something for one of the, he's a comedian. He wrote something for one of the sitcoms, and he was doing well, and they came to him and said, "We have to edit one of your pieces." He said, "Why?" He said, "You used the word midget in there, and we can't do that. You know, you have to say one of these politically correct terms." And he went, "Well, that seems a little drastic. You've never edited me before." He said, "You don't understand, Mark. The word midget is just as bad as the N-word." And he said, "No, it's not." And they said, "What? Of course it is." He said, "You know how I know it's not?" And they said, "How?" He said, "Because we're saying the word midget." And so you've just got different degrees of who's offended or who can be offended or who might be offended. And the bad thing is, you may say something now that's perfectly fine. In 20 years now, they'll play the tape and it's offensive 20 years from now. It's tough. But words mean things. You know, the term crippled. Crippled, I remember that. You know, now in handicapped. Handicapped is not even, you're not supposed to use that anymore. It's disabled or a person with a disability. I remember the cripple. I remember the first time I ever heard cripple was in A Christmas Carol with, what was it, Tiny Tim? He was crippled. I don't, you know, I am sure from time to time I use some of these words and they're, if they offend anybody, it's totally unintentional. But I have to be aware of this. I remember when Indian became a bad word. Now it's Native American or an indigenous person. You know, we all know, the homosexual is not, you're not supposed to say homosexual anymore. You're not supposed to. I remember you're not supposed to say gay or other slangs. You're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to say homosexual. Now you're not supposed to say homosexual. I don't care. I don't care on any of these. I don't care if you're a crippled homosexual midget Indian. I don't care. You know, we can still be buddies. But these words mean things to people. I had one friend, he got in trouble for saying the word hysterical. Hysterical. Hey, I think I use that word a lot. If something is really funny, oh, that was hysterical. You know, historically it's described to, it, I mean, it's used to describe women's emotional state in a dismissive way. So you can't say hysterical. I say it about something that's really funny. No, I'm not talking about a woman's emotional state. So I point this out to tell you not only how important words are to portray what you want, but you've got to understand there are people out there who are focusing on certain words more than others. And there is an evolution to this. You know, from the, you know, the 19th century, different words were, you know, they change over time. And the same words in the early 20th century, you know, a lot of the medical terms, just, you know, around the, you know, your mental health or your mental well-being or, you know, segregational stuff that came up in the mid 20th century. And then, you know, 1990s and 2000s, now you've got things, you got acronyms, the LGBTQ plus, all of that stuff. You know, cultural sensitivity that increased. You can't say Eskimo anymore, starting in the 1990s. It's an Alaska Native. And, you know, in 2010 and on, you've got to have more inclusive language. You know, using the wrong ones. Now with pronouns. You've got to, you know, you don't have to, but according to certain social standards, you have to be all over and up to date with the latest vernacular. Social media has taken us over the top too with a whole new thing. I mean, I don't think you're going to get in trouble for not knowing the acronyms on social media because there's so many, and I think they just make them up so parents don't know what their kids are saying. But there's just so much. I can't keep up with it. I don't want to keep up with it. And I dare say, I'm not going to keep up with it. If a word is taboo by a group, and I refuse to walk on eggshells to keep from inadvertently offending someone. I'm sorry if what I say offends you. When I am at my best, or I'll just say not at my worst, I usually pick words that project what I mean or how I want to come across. If you're offended, I'm sorry you're offended. That was not my intent. However, I am not walking on eggshells to say the words that are going to please your ears. And when I don't, email me, talk to me. If we're in a group setting and it's happened, raise your hand. Because I don't want the rest of the time for you to be sitting there with a lip pooched out because I hurt your feelings. Let's talk about it. I don't mean to do that. Anybody that knows me knows that. A lot of people are hearing me now for the first time. So understand, it was not my intent, but it still happens. But there are entire groups of people that are organized out there with the sole purpose of finding things or making up things to be offended about. Sorry. I am not going to participate. I am not going to participate in that drama or that need for attention. But I will not use language knowingly to offend somebody. I'm not going to use it as a weapon. You know, I'll use negotiations or debates or all moral and legal means to win something. I'm so competitive. Yeah, I mean, but I'm not going to use a buzzword as a cheap gotcha. I'm not going to knock you off your standing or balance by some buzzword or some slur to give me an unfair advantage. But I will do everything I can to win a negotiation, an argument, a business deal. We have a difference of opinion. That's great. That's fantastic. Maybe we'll both learn something. But I will not be held hostage by your new landmines of language. Language is important, and if we let small groups seeking exponential power to hijack our language, we're going to let them change our culture. Things mean things, and the way I say them, that's how I mean it. You know what really upsets me? With the internet. Spam. That's originally one of the savory canned meats of my cuisine. It's fantastic. Now it's just referred to as unwanted or unsolicited messages, emails, junk. They took spam from us, people. How dare they? Nerd, when I was a kid, nerd was a derogatory remark. Now it's like, oh, these are the people. These are the people we work for. It's positive now. It implies expertise. I love it. You know what woke originally was? Originally, African-American vernacular English for being alert to racial injustice. That's what woke was. now, and I think that's fantastic. You need to be alert to racial injustice, but that has been hijacked, completely hijacked by, you know, political groups or progressive attitudes or whatever. It's so far from its original intent. If I'm an African American, I'm thinking, wait, you stole our word. What are you doing here? And we're familiar with the different ones that mean weird, like bad. Used to mean not good. Then it became good. And then it became a song by Michael Jackson. So all of that, words mean things. I think you can pick words and change them. I get tired of some of these words. I don't try to change who I am, but I'm open to using different words with the same meaning. You know what I mean? Like, I remember there for a while, everybody was saying something was amazing. Oh, that's amazing. It's amazing. And I just get tired of it. If everything's amazing, nothing is amazing. So, you know, sometimes it was replaced with awesome. Okay. All right. At least you changed it up. I started using the word, that's incredible. It's incredible. Because people weren't using that word around me. I'm thinking, okay, I'll just, every time that I start to use it, I'll say incredible instead. You know, people hate the word transform. I mean, I'm sorry. Bah! I blew the punchline. People don't like to change. They hate the word change. Use the word transform. It implies the same thing, but it's a little easier on the ears and you don't get that knee-jerk reaction. So there's a lot of things like that. You know, saying something, instead of it was interesting, oh, it was captivating. Or instead of helping, you're empowering somebody. Or, you know, different things like that. It's improve it. We're going to revolutionize this. There's certain words that have a little more power. And they're not the same ones over and over again. You know, I love it when you talk to somebody from, you know, 20 years ago and they're still using the same words. It's like, all right, wait a minute. What does that mean now? Bad used to be good. Is bad bad again? Or is it, you know, can I still say fire? Or will people run out thinking something's on fire instead of, oh, it's a great idea? Or, yeah. I'm pretty hip. You can tell. One thing I did years ago is, you know, people would say, we got to figure this out. Oh, I'll figure it out. You know, can you figure something out? I'm tired of that. I needed one word that was a little more forceful. So I started saying, instead of figure out, determine. You know, we need to determine this. Can you determine that instead of figure out? Because I thought figure out, what does that mean? You know, so determine. And I had a good friend. He became a manager. And he was trying to focus on words. And he would try to sound like an authoritarian, but he also wanted to be a man of the people. So there's a few words like sort of what, you know, that kinda, you know, or wanna, here's what I wanna do, or the word try. We're going to try this. Well, in one word in talking to the team, I think it was the first meeting that we had, he actually said, I sort of kind of want to try something. Wow. Words of wisdom from a great leader. I will follow that guy. We'll stampede the gates of hell with water pistols. I sort of kind of want to try. Count me in, brother. Those words did not instill a lot of confidence to the group. But over time, he became a great speaker. An authoritarian. My goodness, I remember probably 5-10 years later, we had another meeting and he was a subject matter expert on something. He got up there and I was wowed. So you can, not that it takes a lot to wow me. I thought it was incredible, by the way. Yeah, so. Yes. Okay, and then there's some more things. And at first I thought these were Southern, but they're not. They're not. It's really redundant slogans, and now I hear them and I can't unhear them. And unfortunately, when I hear them, I kind of giggle inside, but I'm like, oh yeah, there he goes. One was first and foremost. That's the same thing. It's the same thing. First and foremost. It's like saying beef cow. Yeah. Or end result. It's already at the end, and that's where results come from. And I love this one. Past history. Ah, that's just past history. I knew I was going to say that, but it still gets me. Final conclusion, a free gift. You get a free gift as opposed to an expensive gift. I love it. Advanced warning. Oh, here's a great one. From my childhood, I would hear this. We used to have a music director, and his big one was each and every. Each and every. It's not each or every. Each and every. Both of them.
Have you recently started a new job and feeling a little overwhelmed with all the new challenges and requests from your coworkers? We know just how you feel, and we are here to help. Call Greenhorn Supply. We have everything you're being asked to deliver. Blinker fluid, polka dot paint, metric hammers. Don't look dumb just because you're new. Let us help you out. We've got left-handed screwdrivers, hammer grease. And if you need a bucket of steam, we just got in a truckload. And if you call in the next 3 minutes, we'll give you our free instruction manual covering how to milk a bowl and how to get to the second floor or the basement of a one-story building. Call 1-800-486-3862. That's 1-800-I-AM-DUMB. Or visit our website at greenhornsupply.noedu. Plug in your social security number and credit card info, and we'll deliver your order same day. Or just send us cash to 1449 Gullible Lane, BFE, OU812, and we'll deliver your order same day. Don't look stupid just because you're new. Call Greenhorn Supply.
Everyone. Yeah. And then the last one, and I'll get off this. It cracks me up. Close proximity. Close proximity. Come on, man. Come on. Close proximity. First and foremost, we're in close proximity. I love it. Well, and then there are some words that it's suggested you avoid. And to me, I want this to be, I don't care. You know, if you don't, I don't see a problem with them. But it is suggested. There's some words that, I don't know, they're not necessary. They detract from impact or clarity, says somebody. And, you know, to me, it's like the purple car. If you want to remove these, concentrate on them one at a time. And then it's a purple car means you'll notice it more. It'll be everywhere. Wow, I use that. You know, in editing these podcasts, I noticed I say so a lot. So, and you know. So, you know. And I use them as really fillers. Or instead of saying the next thing, I say so. And then I go on. So, see what I just did there. Taking these words out or identifying these words, it is thought that these words detract from clarity or the impact of what you're trying to say. So here they are. Number one. Very. It's overused. You know, I'm very hungry. Well, you know, we didn't really need that. I'm very tired. You know, I'm tired. I'm hungry. How does very help? It's almost like in A Few Good Men. You know, I object, Your Honor. And he didn't go for it. Well, I strenuously object. Okay. All right. That was unnecessary as well. So very is one. Really. It's kind of like very, you're trying to add to it, but it's not necessary. It's not necessary. Really important? Well, it's crucial. It's important. It's not really important. The word just. You know, I just wanted to say this. Instead of, I just wanted to say. I mean, I wanted to say this. Or just say it. I don't need say just. Stuff. Informal and vague. I got a lot of stuff to do. Got a lot of stuff to do. The word like, oh my goodness. The count of the word like when my kids were teenagers, especially my daughter, I would just like to punch her like in the tonsils, like every time she would like say the word like. It's, you know, it's like really cool. It's cool. How about that? The word literally, literally no one uses the word literally correctly. You know, I literally died. No, you didn't. No, you were shocked. or you upset, but you didn't literally die or we wouldn't be talking right now. And then those things like obviously we need to do this. Well, if it's obvious, don't say obviously. You know, to be honest, you know what they say, if somebody, don't trust a man who says to be honest. And then, of course, the term amazing, which I got tired of quickly. You know, the only thing amazing is Amazing Grace. What a great song. Play at my funeral with some bagpipes. And yeah. So those are just words to, you don't even think about it until you hear it. And then you're going to hear it in your mind. I don't care if you cut them out or not. But it's a little redundant. So when I talk, I've heard the English language is 50% redundant. Yeah, 50% redundant over and over, you know, that kind of stuff. And so if we can remove redundancy, we're a lot more concise. And what I talked about earlier is being clear on your message and concise, that type of thing. So we can always get better. And if you really if you're really interested in getting better and more concise, here's a how-to about words to remove or words to not say. You know, things like that. So some of the powerful words, so, you know, look at me, the linguist from Sheffield, Alabama, you know, the words you don't want to use, why we need to use the right words, the offensive words, how words change. Some of the ones that are, you know, good to say, that they enhance your impact or clarity for whoever you're talking to, is the word essential. Essential means absolutely necessary, of the utmost importance. You know, these tasks are essential. It's essential that you listen to the next statement. You know, word transform. It's kind of like change or improve. It's a shorter, quicker way to say things you really don't. Nobody wants to be told that they need to improve or change. You know, we can transform your skill set. The word compelling, yeah, that's persuasive. You know, it's something that's irresistibly interesting. It's compelling. You make a compelling argument. The term critical, that can replace things like crucial or urgent or a lot of words that are they're overused. This is critical, you know, to our success. Got a couple of other, vital. Vital's a great one. Other than, you know, vital organs. People know what vital means. It's almost like crucial, you know, crucial or essential. This is vital. So you put these in here, and now you've got some new words that you can work with. I love the word innovated. I think that's starting to get overused a bit. But, it, you know, something that's a new idea. You know, transformational stuff. That's innovated. New ideas or methods or, you know, some sort of originality or maybe it's creative. Using creativity, innovative, and then remarkable. The first time I ever heard remarkable, I believe, was in an episode of Little Rascals. Remarkable. Yeah, I love it. You know, it's something that's worthy of attention, something extraordinary. It's remarkable. So, a bunch of words. I don't mind the way the words anybody uses. I don't care. Educated, uneducated, sophisticated, unsophisticated. I just want you to communicate. I don't care what you say to me. Just talk to me. That type of thing. But there's two things that bothers me. It's when someone is portraying themselves, I'll say dishonestly, or they're being a hypocrite. And they're using words as a weapon or a tactic or insincerity. You don't mean that. You're just using that to try to manipulate. It drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. And to me, I want to take them down. I don't want them to try to fool me, and I sure don't want them to fool anybody I care about. And the other time is when somebody is really being sincere. They're doing their best. And they're just coming across in a way that they don't see. And I want to help those people. I do that myself. I hope I don't do the first thing that bothers me. I don't try to hurt people or be insincere, or use words or tactics. But I know I come across differently than I mean to sometimes. And I want to do better on that. And I wish, and people do help me with that. But when I see others do it, you know, in a business situation or in public speaking, or when somebody's hurting and they're sharing their heart and they're trying to convince someone to give them another chance, or, but they're just, they're the language that they're using or their vocabulary, or, you know, if they could just think through this a little more and be prepared when they have a chance to say this, the words we use matter. So I'll be in the news. I'll offend people. I'm not famous enough to be canceled, so I'm not worried about that. But just understand, if you hear something on this podcast or me in public that I say that offends you, it's unintentional. A glorious ambivalence will come in a little bit, and if you pick a word and choose to be offended, I'm sorry it offended you. I'm not sorry I said it necessarily, but I'm sorry it offended you. And let's talk about it, and we can get past it. But let's strive to use the words that portray the image that we want the world to see. I want you to hear me, but I also want you to hear what I'm saying. Thanks so much for joining. I appreciate your support more than you can imagine. Please reach out to me at david@otalks.com or owd@otalks.com. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. Give me some ideas. I've got them lined up. But hey, you send me an idea for a podcast that lights my fire, I'll put it to the front of the list. So let me know. But most of all, thanks for O-Talking with Dave, and giddy up.